This is the Holland Assets Podcast, where we show you how to start and run your own trucking company. Ever wanted to go out on your own? Follow Chris as he goes through the highs and lows of running on his own authority. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Holland Assets Podcast, episode number 149. We're talking once again about finding loads, this time Chris's keys to success. Okay, as though we haven't had enough of those already, right, Chris? Oh, yeah, I'm Craig, and over there, that's Chris.
How you doing, Craig?
Not too bad. You know, my watch actually just, it's beeping at me. Like, you're stressed. Take a breath. Calm down. That's because I had to set up this whole studio again before you got here. So because I had a big anniversary celebration for one of my other podcasts. It was a big to-do, and I had to take all this equipment out. But it was really fun. Chris, how's your week been?
It's been a good week. Yeah. I mean, we're only 2 days into it, so so far so good.
You know what? We can go with the rolling 7 day, right? Like, your week's been
the rolling right. 7 days been good. Yeah. Had a good weekend. It was pretty low key, which is what I like.
Yeah, nice. Let's see. What was I going to say? Housekeeping, Chris. That's where I was going to go first. Is, you know, there's a new piece of housekeeping that we've already talked about a couple of times. But we're going to be reminding people of that more often now, and that is Holland Assets Academy. Okay, so yes, go to hollandassetsllc.com, go to motorcarrierhq.com for all the stuff that we normally talk about. Give us reviews, go check us out on Facebook, all of those things, but make sure that you check out Holland Assets Academy. It is not yet up and running. However, early bird pricing. Right.
So early bird pricing, and you can get on the list to make sure that you get updates on as we approach and get ready to launch. Still probably a couple months out as far as the launch goes, but it's basically just a deeper dive into some of the topics that we talk about here, the things that are really going to make an impact, like dispatching. We're going to go just make it user friendly, show you exactly how to do things, going to be super valuable. Also going to have a good module on accounting that'll take a much deeper dive into accounting and the to-dos, the step-by-steps of all those kind of things, just to make it so you can essentially learn what's taken me years and years and years to learn in a much more condensed time.
Right. Well, there you go. So where do people go? Is it just going to be a link somewhere, or is there a website set up for people to sign up?
So yeah, so right now, if you just go to the show notes for episode one of I think it's on episode 148 or episode 146. If you just go to one of those two episodes and you go into the episode, you'll get a pop-up that will allow you to register. Mm-hmm. You just register there and we'll keep you in.
That's
in
at hollandassetsllc.com.
Yep.
And so what I'll do is I'll figure out which episode that is, Chris, and I'm going to link to that episode's show notes in this episode's show notes.
Making it easy.
So you can also do that. All right, Chris, we want to get to your success sequence for finding loads, but of course I have to ask you for stories from the road, and you told me there's a bit of a, hang on, I got to channel my grandpa here. Bit of a humdinger, Chris.
Yeah, you could call it that. It's a little bit where Cruella de Vil meets trucking. So yeah, it's a pretty funny little episode. We've got some pictures in the show notes, and we'll also do a post on our Facebook page, on our social media. So you can kind of see some of the pictures too that go along with this story.
Nice. So, okay, go on. What's the story?
So one of our drivers, Shelley.
Shelly
was driving down the road and in Arizona and gets pulled over. The police officer, highway patrolman comes up to the window and says, "You're missing a piece of your bumper." And she goes, "No, I'm not." And he said, "Yes, you are."
Rule number one, argue with the cop, right?
Shelly's like, she's a fun person.
She's going, "No, you're missing a bumper, yeah, okay?"
Basically,
your mom's missing a bumper.
I haven't tried a your mom on an officer yet. Maybe next time I'll give that a go.
Let me know how it goes.
Yeah. So they kind of have this little back and forth, and she says, "Well, we had to have the bumper repaired on this thing. And one half of it is black and the other half of it is silver." And he goes, "No, there's a piece of it missing." And she said, I don't think so. Let's go out and check. And he's like, no, just wait. I'll go check. So, you know, he kind of, and before he goes back, she says, yeah, I've named the truck, or I think it was either her or Brad came up with the name, but Cruella DeVille, because, you know, the white hair and the black hair.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like what the bumper looks like. And the police officer got a chuckle out of that. And then she said he went to the front and looked over, and he's in a, she said he just kind of doubled over laughing.
So there's no regulation breaking here. You know, I think I cannot tell you how many times I've driven down the highway and seen one of these Christmas light trucks, with a light out, and kind
like, of naughty, naughty.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're gonna get busted. You better replace that. So I think about things like that now when I'm driving down the road, but no regulation about a standard bumper color.
Because these bumpers come in two pieces.
Right.
So there's a right side and left side. So when we repaired it, we only had to do the one side. We were trying to get the truck on the road really quick. And so we didn't get it painted. So it was the matte black that the bumper came in. And so the police officer comes back, and, you know, he's kind of laughing. He's like, I'm too old for this. I can't even catch that right. I gotta quit. He's like, oh, I'm going to do a level 3 inspection on you while I'm at it. So he takes all our paperwork, does a, you know, quick walk around the truck, comes back, or goes back to his patrol car, types everything up, comes back, hands her an inspection report. Nope, no issues. Sends her on her way.
All your lights are
her
on.
Her and Cruella DeVille.
That's excellent.
So you'll be able to see a picture either on our social, in our social media, or you can go to the show notes. You can see it there. It'll show a picture of the truck. And then also you can see her picture of in the rearview mirror with the patrol car behind her.
Excellent.
That's pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. Well done, Shelley.
And her cute dogs.
On making the guy laugh. Yeah,
I can't remember her dog's name, but her cute dogs make an appearance in the pictures.
Nice. Okay. Well, Chris, in record time, I think, record time, we're getting to the actual meat of the content. Should we talk about Finding Loads? This is our third Finding Loads episode so far.
This is our fourth.
Is it really?
It's the fourth.
Yeah. I'm getting kind of old. I can't see bumpers. Yeah. I can't remember the episode.
You're worse than the officer.
I know. Okay, so basically the last couple of months we've been alternating between financials and these. So if you've missed any of these Finding Loads episodes, they are extremely valuable. Just go back. What would that be? 6 episodes or so, and you'll find all 3 of those leading up to this. And then what's this, Chris? We're distilling all the wisdom down into a final episode.
Kind of distilling it down. We're going to cover some of the stuff we already have, some of the things that I think are the more important pieces of what we've already covered. And then I've got some new tidbits. And kind of, you know, now as of the 1st of March, so as of a week ago, roughly, I'm dispatching all 11 of our trucks. For the previous month before that, I've been doing 10. I only had one more that had to transition over, which transitioned over about a week ago.
And as I understand it, doing 10 trucks or 11 trucks now is it's a breeze, right? You're getting tons of rest. You're relaxed. You're just good natured about life in general because, hey, dispatching trucks is a cakewalk.
Yeah, let's move on to the next. Let's not talk about that right now. I want to stay in a good mood.
All right, fine. So where do you want to start, Chris? What's dispense some wisdom for me, okay? I'm just going to put a quarter in the machine that is Chris.
The wisdom machine? Well, you're not going to get much. So if you think about it, one of the things that's really challenging for most trucking companies, especially when they start out, they rely heavily on the spot market. The spot market's just basically all the loads that go onto load boards, stuff that, not just load boards, but stuff that's not contracted and they need to, you know, fulfill onesies, twosies loads here and there.
Right.
So if you're relying on that, you're going to have a really hard time being successful. You've got to branch out from that. And so a lot of what we've talked about in the last several episodes has been, you know, how do you do that? And I've kind of, as I've been working on this and figuring it out, I've realized that there's really, to finding loads, to do it well and to do it successful, it's both a science and an art. there's, you know, kind of more of that scientific approach, and there's also some art that goes along with it. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to break it down into, you know, the science and the art. You know, the science is really kind of the system, the processes, and crunching the numbers, whereas the art is the relationships and negotiation. So that's basically what we're going to talk about
today. Yeah, I think the last one of these, as we know, my memory is poor, right? So I think it was the last one where I mentioned the 80-20 rule, right? 80% of your time should be spent building relationships and maintaining relationships, and then 20% of the time on the load boards or the what have you. I would love to hear what the numbers actually should be, but something along those lines, right? That's the science and the art. We've kind of talked about this a little bit already.
And we are going to talk a little bit about the 80-20 rule and kind of how that, another way that that kind of comes into this, into dispatching and defining goals.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with the science of it then. You said this is kind of the hard data number crunching. Okay, hang on. Spreadsheets, that sort of thing. Am I on track? Yep. So tell me more about the science behind what you do.
So I'm just going to, there's kind of three things in the systems that are really the big keys. And when we did the episode on systems, we talked a lot about a lot more things, but the things that are really the most important are, one, having a load board that's easy to use so that you can find loads when you need it, when you have a need that you can only fill with a load board. And then having a good transportation management system or TMS. And depending on your size, you know, if you're smaller, you know, I'd say probably somewhere 5 trucks or under, you can kind of get away with just doing it on spreadsheets. If it gets much more than that, you really need to, you know, I'd recommend you get a full blown system. There's a bunch of them out there that does everything from tracking the loads to invoicing, and it kind of, you know, makes it a lot easier for you to stay organized. And that organization is such a critical piece of this.
This is why I do not dispatch your trucks. Okay. Cause that organization aspect is beyond my particular mortal ken. All right. So what else do you need?
And then last thing I want to talk about with systems is just a good file storage system. You know, something that you can access from anywhere in the cloud. So, you know, like Google Drive or the iCloud or OneDrive by Microsoft, any system like that, so that, you know, it doesn't matter where you are, as long as you've got an internet connection, you can access rate sheets and driver information and BOLs and anything that you might need.
Okay. All right. And did you mention weather already? Because that's something we've talked about in a previous episode.
Yeah.
That kind of fits into the systems mix as well, right?
That's another critical piece, especially in the wintertime. You know, if you're traveling just about anywhere in the country in the wintertime, you've got to be on top of the weather, and you got to keep your eye on things. Like, for example, this last week, I took a truck from North Carolina that was coming back to Utah. Usually we'd go, you know, roughly up to I-80 through Nebraska and through Wyoming back down into Utah. That's typically the quickest and easiest route. But there was a huge storm coming across. So we decided to route him on the southern route, where you kind of take I-40 most of the way, get up and through Albuquerque, and then kind of cut across into Utah. And so it's stuff like that. We make those decisions. It's almost an extra 200 miles to do that, but it's worth it when the other option is a good chance that I-80 is going to get shut down and you could be stuck for days, if not hours, hours, if not days.
We all know how much I love I-80, I'm sure truckers love it even more.
Yeah, especially in the winter.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so good. That's a few of the systems that you want to have in place. And then you talked about being organized. There's got to be a process that goes with all of these, right?
Yep.
So where do you start with your process using all these systems?
Just to be, you know, the systems help you kind of be efficient and effective. But then as part of the process too, you have to do things like, one of the key things I think to being successful in this is to be the early bird. You know, I recommend that you're up, you're on the load boards on days that you have to find a load through load boards no later than 8 o'clock Eastern time.
Right.
So for me in Utah, that means I'm sitting at my computer no later than 6. And, you know, even a little bit before 6, you know, 5:30, 6, you'll start to see loads trickling through. And you can tell that, like, there's not a huge amount of people going after those loads. You wait till 6, 7, or 8, and you're getting a lot more competition out there. Mm. You know, loads are going faster. And so it's just a lot of the times I've found, you know, that 6 o'clock in the morning mountain times, with 8 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Eastern, that area is really when I can be the most productive and find the most, have the best chance of getting the load.
Right. Sorry, West Coasters.
Yeah.
You're SOL. Getting
up really early. Yeah.
So when you are doing all of this, are you booking loads for that day, or have you already planned today and you're booking loads for tomorrow or next week or whatever?
I hate booking loads the same day. Okay. I hate it. Does it happen? Do you sometimes get forced to have to do it? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But it's stressful, especially if you've got a driver that's sitting, that's wanting to run. I absolutely hate it. So there's pros and cons of doing both. We've talked a little bit about this. If you want to kind of dive into the conversation, you know, go listen to the episode on the process. But I think it's a bad idea for a lot of reasons. And so I'm typically looking for loads that are 2, 3, 4, sometimes 4 days out.
Right.
Basically, as soon as I know I'm sending a truck into a certain area, I'm starting to look for that reload coming out.
And will you start? Let me ask you this way. When you are searching for loads, nope, it's gone. My thought was it was a great one, but it's gone. so let me mark that. What was I going to say? You know what? Doesn't matter.
It'll come back and like.
Well, it'll come back when we've moved on to something else. Okay, so.
Don't wait.
Any other notes then on this process?
So the other thing, you just want to be as efficient as you can, because it's a busy job. It's hectic. You get interrupted all the time, and so you want to make sure you've got that good efficient process so that things happen quickly. And if you get interrupted in something in the middle of it, you're going to go back to it without forgetting to complete something. And because that can cause lots of issues, you know, if you get halfway through booking low, but don't finalize it, and you think you've got it booked, but it's not booked, and you go to pick it up and it's not,
right.
It causes all kinds of problems. So just be efficient. Like you take, for example, you know, this sounds like something pretty simple and pretty easy, but every time you set up with a new broker, there's typically 3 or 4 documents that you always have to give. And that's your W-9, your carrier authority, and a certificate of insurance that shows your insurance coverages. And so I've got those saved on a folder on my drive that I can get to really quick, so that when I need to attach them to an email, It's right there. I can go attach all 3. So, I mean, you save 30 seconds here, you save 30 seconds there, a few clicks here and a few clicks there, and all that kind of stuff adds up. So you always constantly want to be thinking about, okay, how can I do this more efficiently? You know, like even dumb things like, how do you, when you save a rate con, what's your naming convention? So it's the same every time.
So you can find it quickly.
You can find it easily. You've got it in a spot where you can see everything quickly. Like I've got a folder where I put all my rate cons for active loads in the same place, so I can look down each truck. It's numbered, you know, truck 2, truck 3, truck 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all just really easy to find. And typically what I do, like with my naming convention, it's the truck number, and then it's the brokerage name and the load number. And then I usually have a second file that has the information that I send to the driver. Which is basically the same thing, except for I black out the rate, the payment information, and then also get rid of any additional pages that the driver doesn't need, just so it's simple. And so, you know, I do those things really simple, make it really easy.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you this. You mentioned being efficient, right? So when you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, mountain time, you wake up in the morning, you start looking for these loads. How long are you working on that? And do you continue to do that throughout the day, interrupting other tasks? If you know, you said, hey, if I know that a truck is going here, I'm going to immediately start looking for loads. Is it literally immediately, or do you file that for tomorrow?
Almost always it's immediately.
Yeah.
I'll start looking right away. Or like if I've got a load that's going into a place where I have brokers that I work with regularly, as soon as I've got a signed rate con, knowing that that load is booked, I will email another, you know, broker or shipper that I work with in that area and say, hey, I'm going to have a truck in this area on this day. Do you have any loads for me? And I'll send that out pretty much immediately.
And last question on this is, with all of this documentation, all of the, you know, the naming conventions, keeping everything really organized, how long do you have to archive all of this? And is there a legal minimum? You know, how do you deal with archiving?
The FMCSA requires that you save like copies of bills of lading, you know, anything that kind of goes along with a trip in case your DOT records get audited for at least 6 months.
Oh, is that it? Mm, wow. Yeah. I would have thought it would be more.
You know, a lot of like IRS type stuff, you've got to keep it for
like three years.
Yeah, a longer period of time. But like the IRS doesn't typically need to see the BOL. They might want to see the rate confirmation. So with that being said, like I basically save everything. Like I don't delete it. You know, once, you know, I talked about having that folder where I keep all my current stuff on. When I get finished with it, I don't just delete it. I move it into a place where it gets stored more permanently. Mm-hmm. And these days it's so cheap to,
oh my God,
to for storage.
You can do Google Drive and they'll give you,
for like next to nothing,
a bunch of terabytes worth of data. You'll save $100 a year or something like
hundreds
that.
Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of rate confirmations and BOLs for for a few dollars a month. So
right.
It's easy.
Okay. All right. Good. So let's move on then to the numbers. I know you wanted to talk about knowing your numbers. Are you just talking about your own company numbers? What do you mean by know your numbers?
So really this kind of boils down to your rates, right?
Okay.
So we talk a lot about cost per mile, rate per mile on this podcast, and this is where you really need to know. And this isn't something we've talked a whole lot about in the context of dispatching. So I want to dive into it a little bit more, but specifically it's really helpful if you know your variable cost per mile and your total cost per mile. And you know that is because
to be clear to anybody who's not keeping up, that's how much it costs you to go down the road.
Yep.
Right? Okay. So that's not your rate per mile. You're knowing how much it costs, so you know how much you need to be getting.
Yeah, and because you know, typically at least not long term, you don't want to be hauling loads that are less than your cost per mile.
Right.
And I'm not going to go into the differences between variable cost per mile and total cost per mile on your fixed costs, because that's something we cover in other podcasts. Just search the fixed cost or cost per mile episodes. I think we've done a couple of them. That'll kind of give you some insight if you're not following along with what you're talking about. But when you're dispatching, you know, that's just such a key thing to understand. And the reason is because, you know, you take, for example, you know, sometimes you're going to book a load into an area where you know you're just not going to get a very good rate coming out of that. If you know what your variable cost per mile, you know, that's kind of a good starting point. I at least want to be able to cover my variable cost per mile. That way I'm not really making money, but I'm not losing money. Sometimes you even have to drop below that, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But you also, like another example of a time when I'll really kind of use that variable cost per mile is, you know, sometimes finding loads on the weekends are hard.
Sure.
And finding a load that will keep a driver moving over the weekend is hard to do. And so a lot of times I'll sometimes, you know, on those weekend loads decide, hey, it's better off for me if I take this load that at least covers my variable costs. It's going to keep the driver going over the weekend. And so, you know, they're going to be happier. And so I'll book a little lower rate load than I would otherwise, just kind of for that reason. If I didn't know my variable cost per mile, I'd be kind of just shooting in the dark. But, you know, I know that in this situation, rather than having the truck sit for one of those days or for the entire weekend, I'm better off running them. It's covering my variable costs. I'm okay.
Right. Okay. So on that note, that brings up the idea of a target rate per mile. Right. So sometimes you might have to, you know, take a crappier load than you wanted to. Right. But You want to have a target rate per mile. Am I right?
You do. Yeah. And in your target rate per mile, the way that I look at it is, so I know what my total cost is, not just my variable cost, but my total cost. So everything that it takes to operate my trucking company, let's just say it's $2 a mile. And that's my total cost, but you want to make profit on top of that, right? And so let's just say you decide you want to make 25 cents a mile in profit. So my target rate per mile would be 225.
Okay.
And so basically what that means is on an average, on a blended rate per mile across an entire trip, I want to be able to make that 225. And that gives you a really good target to shoot for. As you gain experience doing this, you're going to get a better idea of how do I make sure I'm hitting that target rate per mile, and you know, what lanes do I hit it in, which ones do I don't. So let's explain a little bit better. Let's dive into an example of exactly what that that target rate per mile means.
Okay.
So let's use an example, a trip where that has three legs. So, and this is pretty common for us, you know, we'll go from Utah to somewhere back east, and then that's leg one. And then a second leg will go somewhere else. And then a third leg will bring us back to Utah.
Right.
So one out, two back. Very, very common with what we do. And this is, you know, following this example is, you know, the numbers aren't exactly the same, but it's the concept is exactly what we do. So let's say that first leg is 2,000 miles out and we get $2.75 a mile. That means our total revenue for that run is $5,500.
Okay.
And then the second leg is $1,500 miles, and the second leg is 650 miles and it's $1.35 a mile.
Which is not great.
Not great. That's
way under.
That's way under. That's not even covering our variable costs. It's basically at $1.35. Depending on fuel prices, we're maybe covering fuel and driver expense, and
right,
that's it.
Right. But then the third leg comes in.
Yeah. So that's for a total revenue of $880. Then you get the third leg is 1,500 miles at $2 a mile, or $3,000 in total revenue. So if you think about it, one leg you're making over your 225 target rate, but on the other two legs you're less than that. But if you add them all together and you weight them based on the miles. So basically add the total revenue, the total miles, divide the total revenue by the total miles, and that'll give you your blended rate per mile for that entire trip. And in this case, I made it work out. So it's 225 a mile.
You're so convenient, Chris.
Look at me doing magic with numbers.
Yeah, that's why you're here. It's not why I'm here.
So the point of this whole thing is that you've decided you want 225 a mile. That's how you can make your company healthy, and you've just got to figure out, you know, what kind of legs or what kind of trips can I do that will make it so that I can make money with that.
Are you counting
rate?
Everything, deadhead miles. And
that's
all
deadhead.
That stuff.
Yeah, I've oversimplified it.
Right.
But you would, when you're doing this, you'd want to use your deadhead miles. Everything needs to be in that to get that 225.
Right. But the point here is that when you have a target rate per mile, you don't necessarily turn your nose up at something that's less than that if you can average out to around your target rate.
So as you operate as a company, you're gonna be doing these routes, right? And as you do them, you know, you need to calculate, you know, what your rate is across all those legs. And as you do that, more and more, you're going to start to see which places you can go into that you can get loads back out of that will meet or help you get that target rate of whatever it is. And so you just kind of have to experiment. And you have to, you know, sometimes you may need to send a truck into a new area that you've never gone to, and you try to make your best guess of, can I get into this area and am I going to be able to get back out of it and be able to hit my target rate? And sometimes you're going to be able to, and other times you're not. But as time goes on, you're going to be able to see consistently that, you know, this particular route, I can consistently hit that 225. And so you're going to want to focus that and do that one more often, whereas you maybe have other routes that, you can do that less consistently, or you can never do it. And then you realize that, okay, this route makes sense. This one doesn't. You just kind of experience. And there are going to be certain times a year when a route makes sense and other times a year when it doesn't. And just as you gain experience and as you gain time, you're going to be able to see that. But the point is, you've got to know that number. You've got to know what your target rate is, and you've got to be able to figure out how to calculate it and make sure you see if you are, or you aren't meeting what that goal is.
Mm. Yeah. But it's not just about miles over the road, right? Because when you're running a business like this, you have to take the days into account as well. Because if a truck is sitting, it's not rolling, it's not making any money, but how much is it losing? Oh, not much, right? Oh, I don't have to worry about it. But you do.
You
right?
do. Yeah. And that's a really great point, because a lot of the times I see, trucking companies say, yeah, I never do anything for less than $350 a mile. And you're like, okay, great. That's awesome. But if you're doing $350 a mile for 200 miles once a day, that's not going to get you much revenue. And so my point is you also have to get a certain amount of revenue a day. And kind of what I target is typically, if I know if I'm getting at least $1,000 a day in revenue, I'm doing a good job. And so, you take, for example, let's use another example, a trip or a lane that gets you, say, 1,000 miles at $2.50 a mile, but stretches out over 3 days, is not the same as that same route of 1,000 miles where you get $240 a mile, less per mile, but it only takes 2 days.
Because you're going to drop that load off, you're going to pick something else up and start making money again.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so, you've got to do that. You've got to not just take into account rate per mile. If you get so fixated on rate per mile, and that's all that you worry about, and you don't worry about how much revenue that truck's bringing in, you could find yourself in a heap of trouble. You take, for example, if you may be getting $350 a mile, which is awesome, but if you're only doing that, once a week, you're not going to earn enough money to, pay your personal bills, to make the truck payment, your insurance payment, and all that. Take into account that revenue per day. And I think they're both kind of equally important. Like you can't discount one or the other. You've got to take both into consideration.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I think that wraps up the science. We've gone through a lot of the numbers. And again, a lot of this stuff, like we said before, we're distilling information that we went into in those previous episodes. So if you felt like we went fast over something, go check out those other episodes. Make sure that you're up to speed on those. Let's talk about the art of finding loads, though. And let's start with the 80-20 rule, which I gave my version of, which I think is just adorable, right? But yours is the real one, and it's a little, the nuance is a little different. So what's your version of the 80-20 rule?
So the 80-20 rule applies to so many different things.
Oh, yeah.
It's an awesome rule. But in my opinion, the success of finding good paying loads, about 20% of it you can attribute to the science piece, whereas the other 80% you attribute to the art. And so the art's much more important. And in reality, most of that is the relationship piece. I think the relationship piece is critical. If you want to be successful in your trucking company and dispatching, you've got to have good relationships with shippers and brokers.
Can I throw a wrench into this, though?
Please.
And say that even when it comes to the art of building relationships, it kind of makes it sound like, oh, it's something you're born with, or it's not, or, some people are just really talented at maintaining relationships. You can actually break it down into a science to a certain extent as well. You've been talking about spreadsheets, tracking rates per mile and days on the road and all that stuff. And yes, you should do that. You can do that with people, too. Have a spreadsheet that tracks which brokers, which dispatchers, which companies, direct shippers you've talked to, all their contact information, and all the last thing you guys
talked
about.
What their kids' names are,
yes.
What their interests are.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I do that all the time. I have a terrible memory. And and so like
choir, man.
I've got a, I keep notes on everything.
You, me, and the cop.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So that's a great point. Like, yeah, you can nerd out on, you can turn this science piece or this art piece a little bit into a science by doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you know that's your weakness, like I'm not the best, like I'm not the most gregarious person in the world.
What?
You know? I'm just not, but I can compensate for that by applying some of those scientific tools to building relationships.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, I've said my piece. What do you consider the art of building relationships?
You know, the big thing here is, the kind of like we talked about in the, I think it was the last episode. It really boils down to most really good loads never hit the open market.
Right.
They, it just like with in real estate that like we talked about, these loads go straight from a broker or shipper to a carrier they already trust.
Yeah.
And the only time the loads actually hit load boards and the open market is when a broker or shipper can't find a carrier they already trust. And so then they post it. That's kind of their second choice. And so the best stuff usually gets gobbled up by their best relationships, and the scraps and the leftovers are what hit the load board.
And put it this way, you were talking earlier about, you know, you hate booking same day loads. You like to be a few days ahead because it's stressful, right? You don't, there's no guarantee that you're going to get something. And we talked in a previous episode about how, yeah, you might get a few cents per mile more if you're going last minute, but ooh, that's a gamble, right? It's worth it to you, Chris, and I think a lot of people, to mitigate that stress, even if it costs you a few potential cents per mile on the load, right?
Yeah.
And for shippers, the inverse is exactly true as well, where they're saying, look, it's going to cost us this much, but we know this shipper, we trust this shipper, and yeah, it's going to cost a few cents extra per mile to get it over the road, but it's worth it to us to know that it's going to get there. We don't want to just trust the spot market, right?
Yep.
So building those relationships, it goes both ways.
It absolutely does. Like brokers and shippers appreciate that. It's easier on both parties. You think, like especially right now, February, March, tough time of the year in the industry. It's harder to find loads. Like I may have, if I'm trying to find a load on a load board, I may have to call or email on 10 or more loads before I find one that's a match. So that takes a lot of work and a lot of time versus I can send one email to a broker or I already know that, or a shipper that's shipping loads out of this area and oftentimes get a load back. I mean, that one email is so much easier than the hoopla of trying to find, you know, something on a load board.
Right. Okay, good. So we're building relationships, we're tracking them in our spreadsheets and whatever. But then when the actual load is ready to be shipped, there's going to be some negotiation, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a whole episode by itself, so I shouldn't be so broad as to say, how does negotiation work, Chris? But how does it work in this context? What do we need to know about negotiation here?
So negotiations incredibly important. How I treat negotiation, it differs. If it's somebody that I've got a really good relationship with, then there may not be any negotiation, or there may be very little negotiation. And you always try to, you know, whether it's somebody I've got a relationship with or somebody new, I never try to be a jerk about it. Like I'm a firm believer if you try to find a win-win situation for both, and you know, if the numbers don't work for you, that work for them, then it's not a match, and don't feel bad about it. They shouldn't feel bad about it, but don't be a jerk. The last thing you want to do is burn bridges, because you'd be surprised how often, you know, you go down a path with a certain broker or shipper, and then, you know, 3 months later, you're going down the same path with another broker with the same broker and shipper. If you, if you're a mean to somebody or jerk to somebody, or you don't negotiate in a professional manner, people typically are going to remember that, and they're going to be less likely to do business with you.
That, yes, 1,000 times yes, but that, and also brokers talk, right?
They do.
They know each other. Yeah. I'm not saying every broker knows every other broker, but eventually if you don't negotiate well, you will build a reputation and make it more difficult for yourself, whether you work with broker X again or not. Yep. So, okay.
Another thing that I think is really helpful when it comes to negotiating is to, again, to know your numbers. You know, if you know your variable cost per mile, and as you're talking with a broker and say, hey, I can't make this work because, you know, my cost per mile is X, I've got to be above that to even make this work. First off, they're going to be, you know, most of them are going to be impressed because most carriers don't know that. And so it's going to make you look more professional. And two, it gives you some leverage in negotiating. Like typically when they hear you say that and they know that, they're going to believe it a lot more than if you just say, hey, I you know, this is where I got to be. But,
right.
You know, if you can explain why you're where you're at, they're going to be a lot less likely to try to push you further down because they know, like, there's credence, there's some power behind what you're saying. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. What doesn't make sense to me, Chris, is acronyms. Because you're a military man, and you wrote down BATNA, and BATNA. I don't know what this is. Okay, what is BATNA?
So this is actually a really important thing in negotiation. When you go through like negotiation classes and training, this is a concept that they talk about all the time. So BATNA stands for Best Alternative to a Negotiated Agreement.
Sure. Who wouldn't have guessed, right? That?
So basically what that means is, let's say you're going and negotiating with a broker on a specific load, but you also know you've got a load in your back pocket that, let's say you want to get to 220 a mile, but you've got one already in your back pocket that you know you've got 215 at. Like, you're not going to feel super desperate to at this point. You've got a good alternative to the one that you're already negotiating on.
This is the get two job offers rule, yeah. Right?
Yep. And so that just makes it so it's that much easier for you to negotiate, because if you don't get it, you're not like way out. You've got something else you can fall back on.
Right.
And it's not always easy to do. But one thing I will tell you, if you're waiting till the last minute, you're probably not going to have a good alternative. That's when you get desperate and you're in a weaker negotiating position.
Right. Okay. BATNA.
BATNA. So remember BATNA.
Don't make me sing it again.
Yeah, do it.
I'm good. I think people got it the first time. Okay, very good. Anything else on negotiating or the art side of it in general?
No, that's kind of it.
Ooh, good, because this is a comprehensive episode. We've gone through a lot.
Yeah.
So I know it's a little bit on the longer side, but I would say definitely go back and listen to this again. In fact, listen to all four of these again if you are in a position where you need to find loads. And that's most of you out there listening, whether you're finding them for yourself or you've got 11 trucks like Chris is doing, or if you've got 200 of them. The process of finding loads is going to be... It's like everything else we've talked about, Chris, you might already be doing it, but you can probably do it just a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, muckle the heck out of this thing or whatever, mickle it.
Mickles, many mickles.
Yeah. Get some mickles going on finding loads, right?
Yep.
All right, Chris. I don't think we have an impact tip except to go check out Holland Assets Academy. Again, I'll do a little legwork and make sure that in the show notes for this episode, I find the link to that. So, you'll have it. Anything else before we break for financials in 2 weeks?
No, I think that's it. Just like you said, if you like this episode, that Holland Assets Academy is just going to dive deeper into this stuff and be even more impactful and helpful.
There you go. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
See you then.